Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. On a very special day on today's program. Because it is Willie Donick's birthday today. Happy birthday, Willie.
Willie D.
I made it.
A year younger.
Happy birthday, Willie Donick. What do you want for your birthday, Willie?
Yeah.
What do I want for my birthday? You know, that's a good question. I would take some Predator victories in the coming days. That'd be nice.
I'm saying something for you, really.
World peace.
not meta world peace.
Yes. Yeah.
The basketball player.
Well, I hate to tell you, I hate to break it to you.
Ron Artest.
We won't see that in our lifetime. So, I mean, unfortunately. So, there we go. But, Willie, you're, gosh, man, what you, 50 years old now?
I'm plus 50. I'm
53. Oh, you 50 plus?
53. I'm Daryl Dawkins. Don Drysdale. I'm trying to think of other
53s. Thunder.
Chocolate Thunder. Yeah. From Orlando. Evans High School. I used
Caroline
to play against his high school.
Like, what are they talking about?
He's from the planet Lovetron.
Yeah, Lovetron. Yeah. See, it was this guy named Daryl Dawkins. He played for the Nets. He played for
Sixers.
A few
with
teams
Dr. J.
Back in the day. But is he in the Hall of Fame?
I don't think so.
But
he was
a character. He was like one of the first original characters, like guys
like
that were
sports characters.
Yeah, just was out. He had a saying like Muhammad Ali and Joe Namath. He was sort of in the line of those guys.
Uh-huh.
Like he was flamboyant, but he showed his worth on the court too. But he had a name for every dunk he had.
Right,
every dunk he named it. So
he was from Orlando. And he went straight from high school into the NBA.
Yeah,
was
he the first person?
He was one of the first. There was only like two or three that ever did it.
Uh-huh.
And he might have been the first.
He might have been the first.
But he played with Dr. J in the Sixers. And that was a high wire act. And Daryl Dawkins, before, he might have been one of the biggest reasons they went to the collapsible rims.
Uh-huh.
The breakaway rims.
Break the rims.
Because he shattered two or three backboards.
I'm sure that was a badge of honor.
Oh,
it was.
See how many backboards I can shatter.
It used to be like this. When that happened the first time, it was mind-blowing. Right? Like,
and the custodians in the place were probably like, not again. We're sick and tired of this. Oh, well, happy birthday, Willie. I hope you have some fun plans in store. Hope to get some Predators victories for you.
Yep.
And speaking of the Predators, former general manager David Poile will join us in 30 minutes. We got Predators Captain's Night on Tuesday night, so some familiar faces coming back to Smashville.
That's going to be really nostalgic. That's going to be cool. All but one of the captains in franchise history, and actually I should say too, the late Greg Johnson, a good friend of mine, did a radio show with the station back in the day. Great guy, passed away a few years ago, so we'll be missing him. He'll be honored that night for sure. But to get the other captains all under one roof, that's going to be cool. Shea Weber is going to be part of our broadcast a little bit here
really
and there.
Cool.
A little hint, a little sneak scoop there. That's going to be awesome. Like, it's just going to be great to see all those guys.
Yeah.
Just to have a little history there.
It's going to be great.
We're building history. 25 years, you actually have like some history, some
it's
nostalgia.
The Eras Tour of the Predators.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So that's Tuesday night. Predators back in action on Saturday hosting the Arizona Coyotes. So we'll get into all of that with David Poile in just 30 minutes. We also had some NFL awards last night. C.J. Stroud, Offensive Rookie of the Year by no surprise, I don't think, to anyone. Will Anderson, Defensive Rookie of the Year. We had Lamar Jackson, League MVP. We had Myles Garrett, Defensive Player of the Year. Any problems?
No, I think
Christian McCaffrey,
of the year,
Offensive Player of the Year.
I thought
it was going to be D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah, D'Amico Ryans should have. I mean, they were tied, but Stefanski got one more first place vote. I think they both ended up with like, what, 160 something votes somewhere around
there? It was neck and neck.
Yeah, it was neck and neck, but he had one more. But he's deserving of it too because their team had a bunch of injuries and they found themselves playing in the playoffs with a quarterback that was sitting on the couch. You know, and he came in the last six games of the season, somewhere around there.
Yeah, your boy Joe Flacco, comeback player of the year.
Absolutely, he won comeback player of the year.
Deserved.
Well deserved. So I didn't see any surprises in there. You know, I think guys that won deserve to win. And guys that were in the running deserve to be in the running for those respective awards. So, you know, I didn't see any problem with it.
Yeah.
Those are tough. There's always, I'm sure, every year, disappointment, you know, snubs. But it's just, it's hard when you try to narrow it down to one in a league of 32 teams and a lot of great players. That's tough.
I saw T.J. Watt doing a little bit of crying on Twitter last night about not getting the defensive player of the year. But like, it, dude, whatever.
Just stop it, man. I mean,
but he's deserving, right? But
he's deserving of it in any given year.
Uh-huh. There's probably some are different. No question about it. So you can't sit there and say Myles Garrett's not deserving.
Exactly. I understand being disappointed, but you know when you start, you know, making it seem like. You know, you were snubbed or woe is me. It's like, dude, I mean, you're a great player. You've reached that status of, you know, upper echelon players in the National Football League. You didn't win it this year, but you may win it next year. Did he win it last year? He's won it. Has he won it?
I don't even remember.
There's
who
so
won
many
it
damn Watts
year.
In the NFL. I mean,
it's hard to keep track of them. So many freaking awards.
I know his brother won. JJ won twice, I believe.
At least. I think JJ won twice. Such a wrecker.
Yeah, so. But and then TJ Watt missed some games, didn't he? For the Steelers?
I feel like he did.
I think he did.
At the end of the season. He missed the playoff game, right? He didn't play in the playoff game.
I think he missed games before that. So, I mean, Myles Garrett might have missed some games too. But when you start missing games, and say if a person played a whole season and you missed two or three games, well, there you go. That's why you didn't win it. Had Lamar missed a game or two, he probably wouldn't have won MVP.
Yeah.
You know, but he didn't. He ended up playing the whole season. So congratulations to him as well.
Had Myles Garrett not been able to stat pad a little bit against Andre Dillard, maybe he would
have
won it.
Yeah. I mean, so
Andre Dillard.
Watt did play all 17 regular season. He played, okay. Missed the playoff game. 19 sacks, led the league. I mean, he's got an MVP resume for sure.
Yeah,
but
of course.
You cannot.
He won it in 2021, by the way.
Yeah, okay, I figured you had won it once.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Yep.
So, I have no problems with it.
Yeah,
but
me either.
I do want to get into this because yesterday we heard a little bit of a tidbit before the end of our show from Jared Sit Down with Will Levis talking about what he's doing in the off season and, you know, taking just a little bit of a mental break, a little bit of a physical break. And that's kind of what we touched on yesterday is, look, I have no problem with you taking a break. I have no problem with you letting your body heal, maybe mentally just kind of resting a little bit before getting back into the brunt of off-season training. But one thing that we did point out yesterday was, that's fine if you do that, but understand the perception when you are a starting quarterback in the National Football League, when you're talking about taking breaks, that might not always land very well with everyone across the fan base or across the NFL. But we heard the entirety of Jared's Sit Down with Will Levis yesterday. I thought it was a great interview. Had a lot of great insight. Really, overall, for the most part, I thought Will Levis said all the right things.
Yeah.
He was asked about, should the Titans go left tackle or receiver? Just whatever player that makes us the best. That's the PR correct answer. But there were a couple things that I wanted to touch on, a couple things that we heard from Will Levis's Sit Down with Jared on Radio Row at the Super Bowl. Speaking of Will Levis, I saw he was killing it in Texas Hold'em at a FanDuel celebrity poker tournament yesterday.
Man. That's impressive.
It was very impressive.
1 in 22,000 is what they said, the odds for that to happen.
What did he do? I heard it was some big deal. I'm not a poker person.
So he had I believe it's called the River, the first three cards in Texas Hold'em. Is that correct? Anyways, he guessed the first three cards of the dealer to put out on the table.
Pretty impressive.
Which is crazy. I think he said 489, and it came out as 894.
So is that indicative of what's to come? Will Levis,
I think he's
NFL MVP 2024?
Nostradamus, possibly.
Sounds like that's in the works. But there was one thing that Will Levis touched on. One thing that he said that he was incredibly proud of. I don't know if I necessarily, just from watching games, if I necessarily agree with it. But this was Will Levis yesterday on one thing that he was proud of throughout the season.
Do you look back at, you know, I get the vibe also that you probably look back at the mistakes and think, oh, if I had hit Treylon Burks on that throw, or, oh, if I had, you know, looked at this guy in the Pittsburgh game, or, oh, this would have. How do you kind of look at that and say, okay, next time that happens, I will make the right decision here?
I think, honestly, one of my strengths is I don't think watching the tape from week to week, like it was rare that I caught myself making the same mistake twice, like 2 weeks in a row or something like that. So I really do like take coaching well, I think, and that I'm able to, you know, understand that, you know, making a mistake for the first time, like that's going to happen to any player, but you know, it becomes more on you when it happens the second time. So I take pride in that. And but it's important to not beat yourself too up about those plays, because I know that I have the ability to make all the plays that I didn't.
Now, one thing that I do like about that is Will Levis acknowledging, hey, I'm going to make mistakes. And you are, especially when you're a rookie and getting your first shot in the NFL. You are going to make those mistakes. The important thing is that you learn from them. Just based off of what I saw, I don't know if I would necessarily agree that he didn't make the same mistake twice.
Well, he said clearly, it was rare. He didn't say he never made the same mistake twice. He said it was rare that I made the same mistake twice. But I do think, you know, you can probably judge it. It depends on what your standard is.
But clearly that's something he's hearing from the coaches.
Oh, yeah. And I think we all saw that there were throws that you're like, oh, boy, hope he learns a lesson from that. You know, but I think that is a key part, is the self-evaluation. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say, D. Mace?
Yes.
I think that is a huge area for him to be focused on. Right? I like that he kind of went there. Like the question was not, hey, did you ever make the same mistake twice? He sort of took that answer there. So you can tell that's on his mind of how he's trying to improve, right? Go through the film study and be tough on yourself, right? And say, okay, how often did I make the same mistake twice? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't expect him to go into all the details, but I think that's going to be important, is that concept of, okay, I'm learning, and now the next time I see that coverage or next time I'm in that situation, I'm going to be better prepared to make the right play.
Well, if he's making same mistakes over and over, then he's not ready to be a starter in this league. So obviously, there's something that, you know, as they're watching film, he and the coaches are looking, and they're excited, or they are, you know, they're looking at the film and they're thinking, okay, this is what I want you to do. You shouldn't do that anymore. Read the coverage properly. And then you come back the next week and you know teams are, you know, sort of playing the same defense because it's a copycat league. And if you, you know, fail to read a defense one time or twice, then the next team is going to come back and run that defense at some point in the game, or that blitz at some point in the game. But it's encouraging when you can look at the film and think, you know, okay, they got me that time. Fast forward, that's the same defense they didn't get me. And then the coaches start pointing stuff like out like that. So that's good for a young quarterback, because if you turn on the film and he's making the same mistakes over and over again, then you're not ready to be a starter. So he should take pride in that. But he should want to get, you know, better. It shouldn't be, you know, do I rarely make the same mistake again? It should be, I don't make the same mistake again. And that comes with playing more, maturity. It comes with, you know, being underneath center and seeing multiple defenses consistently. Because, again, like I said, there's only so many defenses you can play. I mean, you know, they may disguise it, but ultimately at the end, they're going to be playing the same defense that you saw last week, but different jerseys, different numbers, different teams. All teams run a variation of the same defense, but maybe out of a 3-4 instead of a 4-3 or whatnot. But if you can recognize, that's what makes the great quarterbacks who they are, the Peytons, you know, the Mannings, the Bradys, the Brees, because they've seen everything that you've thrown at them, and you can't
tough
fool.
To pull.
It's
tough yeah. to,
it would amaze me, like, if you've never been on the sideline and watched Peyton Manning, you missed out on something. You truly missed out, because there would be times when offense is on the field, I'm usually on the sideline, you know, getting instructions or just resting. But when Peyton Manning was quarterback, I found myself, you know, watching more than anything, because it amazes me how he predicts everything before it's happening. And it's like this chess match. So that's where you want to get to as a quarterback, you know, where it becomes a chess match, where you're figuring out what they're doing before they do it. You know, you see keys and tips. And you pick up on it very quickly.
And I'm curious too, Caroline. I think this is where you were going with your question, right? Is, okay, he's doing his own self-evaluation. Mm-hmm. And then what would somebody else, maybe somebody from the coaching staff, as they look at it, like his new offensive coordinator, his new quarterback's coach, as they go back and look, would they, what standard would they hold him to when they agree with him? Would they agree with him that, okay, he rarely made the same mistake twice? Or would they have a little bit more of a, okay, there's still some other things here? Like, who's to say, right? And then an outside person like a Rich Gannon, if they watched all the film, would they agree with him? That's what I would be curious, just from different perspectives there.
And what I think,
because sometimes you can be that guy, and I don't think Will Levis is like that, right? But there are some persons. What are you talking about? I never made any mistakes out there. What are you talking about?
What I think is important to distinguish is just because a result may have looked the same does not mean that the actual mistake itself was the same. Like, you could say, oh, well, Will Levis threw a couple of late picks at the end of games. They did it, what, against Pittsburgh. Yeah. He did it once, maybe against Indianapolis. Mm. I don't have it up in front of me, but there were several times throughout the end of the season where Will Levis was throwing. He was a just toss up. Oh, he did it in the preseason too. Got to toss it up. It got intercepted at the very end of the game. You might look at that and say, well, that's a mistake that Will Levis makes over and over again. Well, that's something that has happened to him multiple times, but is the actual mistake the same? Mm-hmm. I think that takes a quarterback evaluator, whether it be a quarterback coach or Brian Callahan, to look at that and say, okay, what were you thinking? What was the coverage? What did you feel like you needed to do? Here was the footwork. Here were the mechanics, the actual, you know, movement of your throw. This is what was right. This is what was wrong. So I think it's easy for me to just look at a result and say, oh, well, you know, there he goes again, making the same mistake again. When if you're actually breaking down the situation in the game, what the coverage was, in the actual technique, it might be completely different. Yeah. And that's what he's getting from the coaches. That's a different message.
And I go back to this, mm-hmm. D-Mace. When you, there are some people that I think are extra hard on themselves.
He might be one of those people.
And to me, that can be a strength, right? As long as you don't beat yourself up so much that you lose confidence because of it. But there are people that, mm-hmm. they hold themselves to a high standard, and so they're saying, man, and somebody, it's, sometimes it takes somebody from the other side to say, now wait a minute, don't be too hard on yourself. Mm-hmm. You did all these good things too, but
exactly.
All that one person is going to say is, yeah, but I did this one throw, I should have had that guy, you know. You know what I'm saying? And then there are other people that are saying, I never screwed up, what are you talking about? And then it takes that balance on the other side to say, hold on now, you might think you played well, but you've got to do better in this and this. So don't just talk about all these touchdown passes you throw. What about all these other plays that were out there that you left on the table?
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between, you know, when we're talking about a quarterback, that's the difference between making the same mistakes and making a bad throw. You can, if they're playing, you know, cover two and you're trying to throw, you want to throw a hitch versus cover two, and the receiver knows to outside release and run a nine, and you throw it as if he's running a hitch. That's a mistake. You can't do that. Then you subsequently do it again. Those are mistakes. But a bad throw is, okay, I saw the coverage. They rolled up. He outside released, and I tried to fit it in that hole. I was thinking that was the right play, but it was just a bad throw. Yeah. A bad throw and making mistakes over again, those are totally two different things, because you can read the coverage perfectly, but the ball, for whatever reason, just comes out of your hand kind of weird and funky and may come funky. Excuse
me. Could get tipped.
It may get tipped. It may go high. It may, you know, go low or whatnot. So there's a difference between that. But quarterbacks, I mean, listen, quarterbacks got to have short memories, just like defensive backs. Because if you harp on that last throw or that last missed coverage, then it's going to affect you through the whole game. So he, like you said, Willie, he can't. Yeah, you can be critical, but you can't be critical to a point where you are sort of hampering yourself from going out there and playing, you know, at the level that you can play at.
You can't marinate on mistakes that you may have made, because that's only going to lead to more mistakes.
You got to forget about it. As soon as you throw an interception or throw a bad, you got to forget about it and go to the
goldfish. Be a goldfish.
Be the goldfish. Mm-hmm.
Be a goldfish. Yes. And it is interesting. I think that all of the evaluations that I've heard at the Super Bowl, whether it be conversations that Jared has had, conversations that Jim Wyatt has posted on his Twitter, or any other things that have surfaced on social media or on TV, evaluations of former quarterbacks, mm-hmm. you know, national media people, all of their evaluations of Will Levis sound very similar. And they kind of sound similar to maybe what our evaluations mm-hmm. could be as well. You know, you have a small sample size of about half of a season of his mm-hmm. rookie season of we see a lot of really great things. Mm-hmm. He's got a heck of an arm. Mm-hmm. He's incredibly tough. You see things there. But also maybe we need to see more. Maybe you need to see the mistakes start to – you start to eliminate some mistakes. Yeah. Maybe start to make some better decisions, have some better judgment. All the evaluations have been – I like what I've seen so far, but there's some things that need to be worked on. And I think that we would probably – that is at least my evaluation of him as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's shown glimpses of what he can do in this league. He has shown the potential of a guy that can be a really, really good quarterback in this league. But, you know, unless you take that potential and – do what is necessary to hone in on your craft, then, you know, potential is going to get you cut and potential is going to get your coach fired because you never reached that potential. But it seems like, you know, it seems like he's a guy that wants to be flawless, even though you can't be flawless in this game. He wants to be flawless. And that's a good thing. He strives for perfection. And that's not a bad thing whatsoever. But there were things that we saw that was good, and there were things that we saw that he needs to get better at, plain and simple. And my whole thing was, because of the things that were around him, me as a person, I started to see a few little bad habits here and there. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to necessarily hold that against him because of what was in front of him. You know, maybe if he had a clean pocket majority of the times, then we wouldn't have seen those little things that can potentially be big problems, some habits that can become big problems and derail you as a quarterback. Maybe we wouldn't have seen them, but that's not the case. We saw them, and hopefully they can get this line situated so we won't see those things as much. He's still going to have his mistakes that he makes throughout the season, this summer of the season, because he's still a rookie quarterback to me. He's still a rookie quarterback, so he's going to have mistakes, but how does he capitalize? How does he come back from those mistakes?
And that's what it sounds like the Titans' priorities this offseason are, mm-hmm. is give Will Levis a better situation. Mm-hmm. Bringing in a quarterback guru head coach, bringing in Bill Callahan to beef up the offensive line. And we'll see what pieces they put around Will Levis. But that'll give us a better evaluation of truly what he can be is when he has better circumstances around him. Because you're going to need Will Levis to turn into what they saw in him on draft night, or at least night two of draft night, because he got C.J. Stroud, the offensive mm-hmm. rookie of the year, in an AFC South that's only getting more difficult, in an AFC that is stacked from top to bottom with quarterbacks. All right, we'll catch up with former Predators general manager David Poile. We've got Captain's Night at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday. David Poile will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. A-town. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we are broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. We're going to have Ask D. Mace in 1 hour, get those questions in for D. Mace. 615-737-1025 is the phone number.
You think Usher might play this song at the Super Bowl and halftime?
No, because he got a new CD. He has a new album out that came out.
He's got to play this
yesterday.
One.
Come on, he's got to play this one.
This is a classic.
There's other songs he can play that I think people would love, but if y'all hadn't heard his new album, please get it. It's
good, huh?
It's okay. It's
all right. I'm looking for
fire.
Some
is that what the kids say now?
Yeah. Is it good to work out to, D-Mace?
Yeah. It's good to work out to. Okay. You can work out to it. Yeah, there's some songs on there you can work out to.
I do wonder what he's going to start off with. A classic.
Maybe it's David Poile.
There are odds for that.
Start off with.
There are odds for that. What's the first song? Ooh,
yeah. We'll get to that later in the show.
We'll get to that. That's the important stuff. Former Predators general manager David Poile joins us now. David Poile, appreciate your time, and it's great to have you back on our airwaves. We've got Captain's Night at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday night. Mike Fisher, Shea Weber, so many familiar faces to Predators fans will be back in the building on Tuesday. What is that going to be like for you, being able to kind of relive some Predators history?
It's going to be great for me, and I hope for our fans. It's kind of cool. As they say, time flies when you're having a good time. I can't believe it's been 25 years to celebrate the Predators. It's actually been longer for me since we started the year before, like in 97. We had a couple of work stoppages or whatever. But I'm looking forward to seeing all those guys. Again, I think it's pretty cool. They were so important as players in our organization. As I always say, both not only on the ice, but off the ice and with a lot of our organization in terms of their leadership. So I'm looking forward to it.
What kind of fanfare can we expect on Tuesday?
Well, as I understand, there's going to be a couple of fan interactions. They have some things at the Omni Hotel, I think, on Tuesday between 5 and 6 o'clock, where there's questions and answers. I think they're having a luncheon available on Tuesday. So, and then they're going to drop the puck, and I'm sure they're going to be around to be visible during the game for fans to interact with them. So it should be good. Obviously, some of our most not only some of our most important players, as I said earlier, but in some cases, some of our best players. So it's a lot of memories for me, I'll tell you that.
We're talking with former Nashville Predators general manager David Poile. Now, David, have you gotten – and I know you were last year, you were sort of segueing out of it, and you were probably doing some things a little bit different, preparing Barry for the task at hand. But have you gotten used to the retirement this year, or are you still busy doing things?
Well, I'm still busy doing things. I don't think for somebody who's been in hockey their whole life is ever going to be quite retired, if you will. I mean, as I say to Barry, there's the difference between he and I now is that I'm watching all the games and you know, win or lose, I'm going to bed like 5 minutes later. Win or lose for him, he's up for 3 or 4 more hours, you know. So it's certainly different there, and you know, you still communicate with you know, some people in hockey, and of course Barry and other people in the Predators organization. I've been around a little bit, but not, I don't think too much. So you know, it's good for me, if you would say. I'm getting weaned off the game, and retirement certainly is good. I'm actually speaking with you now. I'm down in Florida, which is can't be that right now, but do I miss it? Of course I miss it. But again, I'm fully comfortable with my decision, and really happy for our organization, for Barry, and actually, you know, how we're doing this year. I think the team is doing well, you know, because we took a big step back last year with some significant and big trades. And, you know, there's a lot of assets we're getting back for those players that we traded away, but we don't have any of them just yet into our lineup. But in the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to see a real bump, I think, in terms of the younger players getting into our lineup, and, you know, getting back into being a Stanley Cup contending team every year, which we want to do and which we've done for a number of years. So it's a little bit of a reset, but all in all, I'm in a good place, and I think the team is doing real well.
And that was going to be my next question, David, in regards to the team. Is this, from the outside looking in, knowing how you left the ball club, did you expect them to be at the point that they're at now, or do you believe they're a little bit ahead of schedule?
I actually think they're a little bit ahead of schedule. I mean, we're certainly going to find out a little bit more now coming off of the All-Star break. The games and the intensity gets tougher, and, you know, we're, you know, I love our work ethic. I think we certainly leave it all out on the ice every night. I love the character of our team. I like the way we play, all those things. I think we just, you know, we're a little bit challenged to, you know, score some goals. We're getting some, you know, great production of our top line, but we need some other players, some younger players, to be able to chip in a little bit more and, you know, give us a little bit of breathing room. So we'll see if that happens in this last 31 games. But all in all, you get a lot of younger guys like Evangelista, Tomasino, Jeremy Lauzon is a really improved player this year, and a lot of kids in Milwaukee that you haven't heard too much about. It, I believe they've won, knock on wood, when I say this, their last 11 straight games. They're probably as good as any team in the American Hockey League. And that means we got, you know, several players are going to be wearing Predators uniforms in the not too distant future. So all in all, I think the plan is there's a plan there, there's a direction there, and we need to keep improving. We need these younger guys to be starting to make a little bit more of a contribution, and hopefully we'll see that in a latter part of this year.
David Poile is with us, and we're looking ahead to Captain's Night on Tuesday night when the New Jersey Devils come into town. There's a reason why we're doing it when the Devils are here, because the general manager of the Devils happens to be rolling through town. That's Tom Fitzgerald, who was the original captain of the Predators. And David, I want to take people back to that time, because it wasn't like you played a half a season with a bunch of new guys and said, let's see who emerges as a leader. You pretty much handpicked Tom Fitzgerald to be the first captain before you guys ever played a game. So take me back to those days and why he was the right guy.
Well, I think between Barry and myself, we looked at who we had from the expansion draft, and we were able to sign Tom as a free agent. And I think we also both realized how important it would be to form an identity, a culture, as soon as we could, as Barry coined the phrase, the Predator's way. And it seemed to us that Tom Fitzgerald was this guy. You know, a little bit of a background search on him as a person, a character, his family, all those different things. And he and his wife, Carrie, were terrific. And again, this goes back to what I said before. It's not only on the ice, but it's off the ice. Nobody's been to Nashville before. You know, they were the social directors of our team, getting all the players in town comfortable, you know, having over to their house or having different functions. And as I said to somebody else yesterday, that again, we were trying to be not only good on the ice, we were trying to be good off the ice. And that got into the, you know, being involved with the community, which I'm so proud of, in terms of what our players and our people in our organization, how they participated in the Nashville community over the years. And that all started in the first year. And, you know, Tom Fitzgerald deserves a lot of credit for knowing what to do, what the right thing was to do, and to help set the culture for the Predator way. So, again, a player that wasn't, with all due respect, was not a star player, but, you know, could play on any team. He could play a role on any team, and he was an important piece for the Predators.
The next couple of captains, I think, are really cool in the evolution, because they were guys that emerged as leaders out of that group of, you know, that first year of, let's just see if we can find some people that fit. And I'm thinking of Greg Johnson and Kimmo Tiiminen, who turned out to be really good players, but also they kind of followed along in the footsteps of the leaders. And we continue to miss Greg Johnson, such a sad, we lost him too early, but kind of a quiet, underrated person in Predators history in a lot of ways, right? Because he sort of was that bridge from this hodgepodge of guys you got to work with in the first year to a good player on a really good team.
Yeah. Well, you talk about people that were low maintenance and were coaches' dream. That was Greg Johnson. I mean, honest as the day is long, how he played was, you know, was no highs, no lows, no long slumps. He was just a terrific guy and well liked by everyone. He, I believe his roommate at the time was Scott Walker. You know, and Scott was, I'd say, way more flamboyant than Greg was, but it was sort of like, you know, the odd fellows kind of living together and being leaders of our team. But Greg was honest day's effort all the time. And you have that at the top of your leadership board there, everybody's going to come to play and they're going to respect what the captain does. Kimmo Tiiminen was a player that I'm so very proud of. And I think Barry and I, you know, we were lucky that we found him. He'd been drafted by LA, and he went to a training camp with LA, but they thought he was too small to play. We were in a position to give people chances, and, you know, we both saw him in a World Championship or something like that, and we said, we got to get this guy, and we ended up making a deal with LA to get two or three players, which he was one of them. And I mean, he turned out to be just getting better and better and better. And then he got his own confidence that he could play in the league, and he got his voice, if you will, and became a leader on our team for a long time. And again, a fun guy, upbeat guy, lots of energy. And it was a, you know, perfect guy for that time to be our leader and be our captain.
And David, it was, continue our discussion with David Poile, the first homegrown captain, if I recall correctly, I think I'm saying that right, but Shea Weber, who was, you know, drafted by the team, grew into that role. We got a little glimpse of it when he came back for Pekka Rinne's honors and accolades. Just when he was recognized, you could tell how much the crowd wanted to jump in there. I think he's the guy that I know just personally. I'm excited to see him sort of have his moment on Tuesday night. I think the crowd is really going to be drawn to him. Now that all this time has got to pass, you almost appreciate a guy like that even more, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. And you're right, homegrown, and got better and better, bigger and stronger, and had more, you know, gained his voice. He's, you know, somewhat of a shy person, I think, to an extent, unless, you know, get him alone one-on-one and what have you. But I don't know if I'm probably showing my age here, but I don't know if you guys remember this whole commercial, like E.F. Hutton, which was an investment company. When E.F. Hutton spoke, it was a little whisper. Everybody paid attention.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
He didn't have to say much, but when he said something, that was it. And he got everybody's attention. And, you know, I don't want to say he ruled by fear, but I think he nobody wanted to cross Shea. Let's put it that way. And I don't think anybody wanted to disappoint Shea. So loved having him as a captain and as a player with our team. I mean, obviously, one of the greats of all time with the Predators.
And I think you said this on our morning show earlier this week about, you know, the whole history of the trade. And if you look at the trade, Shea Weber for P.K. Subban, you know, both teams ended up having benefits, and P.K. Subban had three outstanding seasons for personally and for team success with the Predators. But, of course, your heartstrings are for a guy like Weber with the history and all of that stuff. And I feel like enough time has gone past, right, that I feel like he's probably in a better place. I know you guys have talked through it. But I think what people probably need to realize historically was that offer sheet, right, the contract, which is still enacted right now, was a big part of that whole equation.
Yeah, I said that yesterday on the morning show that, you know, it's not like if I could have a do-over. It's, you know, there's, you know, I wish I could have had more one-on-one time with Shea, maybe in our relationship. You know, you have agents, you have the business part of hockey. I mean, it worked out well for all of us. Like, you know, he got a huge contract. We've had our best years with the Predators, but it felt like he should have been a Predator for his career. And I wish we could have worked together, he and I, or and his representatives, to make that happen. But it just was just not meant to be under the circumstances. And you know, as I referred to yesterday, now we got a chance with people like Philip Forsberg and Yossi, you know, for them to be with us for their careers. We did it with Pekka. I think there's some real value for your franchise when you're able to do that. It doesn't happen very often in any sport with any players, but again, Shea was a special player for us, and I'm really happy that we've had our time to talk about my side, his side, and all of the things that have happened. And you know, I'm really happy that he feels part of the Predators, and he's happy to come back to Nashville and for the Pekka thing, for the captain's thing, and he's certainly welcome in my book anytime to be part of the Predators, and he was a huge part of our history.
Former general manager David Poile. David Poile, appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, and enjoy the walk down memory lane and the celebration of Predators history on Tuesday night.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Hopefully see you guys on Tuesday.
Appreciate it. Have a good one. Former general manager David Poile. I'm excited for Tuesday. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a blast. Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, back in action on Saturday. Willie, I know that you're itching to get back to the rink.
I'm ready. I'm rested, ready to go, raring to go.
And it's an important stretch for the Predators, an important handful of games before the trade deadline to make a push to get back into playoff position. What do we want to see from the Predators when they're back on Saturday night hosting the Arizona Coyotes? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. And, hey, you can tune into 93.3 Classic Hits tomorrow as MTSU basketball takes on FIU on the road. Pregame at 12:30, tip-off at 1 p.m., with coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3classichits.com.
I actually think you're a little bit ahead of schedule. I mean, you know, we're certainly going to find out a little bit more now coming off of the All-Star break. The games and the intensity gets tougher. And, you know, I love our work ethic. I think we certainly leave it all out on the ice every night. I love the character of our team. I like the way we play, all those things. I think we just, you know, we're a little bit challenged to, you know, score some goals. We're getting some, you know, great production of our top line, but we need some other players, some younger players, to be able to chip in a little bit more and, you know, give us a little bit of breathing room.
That was former general manager David Boyle on with us in the last segment. Appreciate him for stopping by. Predators Captain's Night on Tuesday night, but the Predators back in action on Saturday hosting the Arizona Coyotes. That's a team that for some reason just always seems to give the Predators fits, but this is a really critical stretch of 8 to 10 games before the trade deadline. And Barry Trotz has taken the approach of, hey, what are we going to do at the trade deadline? Why don't you tell me? Why don't you show me what we should do at the trade deadline? Willie, what do you want to see from this team coming back from the break?
I think anytime you've been off for, I don't know exactly, is it 9 days, 10 days since their last game, whatever it is, I think that's always the number one thing. I know if I know Andrew Brunette, or really any coach would say this, that is going to be what stresses them out tonight. The night before the game when you're trying to get some rest, you're probably going to be like, what can I do to see to it that my team jumps in and doesn't and limits the amount of rust?
Yeah.
For example.
Comes back ready, not easing back into it.
100%, because you've got to have that urgency. And last year they had the nightmare under a different coach, right? And I know John Hines probably spent as much time thinking about it as you possibly can. What do I do? How do I get my team ready? And then for whatever reason, they came out flat. And they had played so well going into the break.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, man, can we keep playing? Can we play a few more games? Because we're on a roll. So you had to take the break. You come back, and it took a couple games to get them going. And there was no margin for error. And I think you have kind of a similar thing. We've assessed what it is. 31 games. They're not going to win everyone. They're not going to lose everyone. But they have a shot to get that last playoff spot. But every game is going to be important. So jumping back in is going to be a trick. And on top of that, Arizona got to play last night. And so I think that's even more difficult. I'd much rather be the team going into tomorrow that's played a game,
Even
though Arizona lost, and they're traveling today. They've got one under their belt, and Nashville does not. So I think that's a little added challenge. And as you mentioned, they've had trouble with the Coyotes. They've lost to them twice this year, and the Coyotes have that good young talent. Now, there's so much surrounding that franchise right now with their future in the city. I don't know what effect, if any, it's having on the players. You've also got Connor Ingram coming into town, who has beaten the Predators twice now, his former team. The Predators put him on the waiver wire, and I could see absolutely the reasoning at the time that they did it. They wanted a little more experience with the backup behind UC Saros, but to his credit, Connor Ingram has done a great job for Arizona. He's earned a next contract. He's paid his dues, and he's a great guy, so I'm happy for him, but he's beaten the Predators twice now. They've got to find a way. Now, he gave up a bunch of goals the first game. Nashville, in the first meeting with Arizona way back, they had a couple of two-goal leads. They were scoring big time. They had the game seemingly under control and let it slip away. And then the last game against Arizona, I thought they were just flat-out outplayed by Arizona. So a lot going into tomorrow, because I think there's a lot of people with their eyes on, okay, what are we going to see in these last 31 games?
Well, they're going to have to see something to what you were saying as far as coming off of the All-Star Week. This team right now sits in the third spot as far as the wild card. But they're tied when you're talking points with the Blues. But they also have played, two more games or three more games than those two teams.
Two more than the Blues.
Yeah, so two more than the Blues. So to me, it's imperative for them to start off on a good note. And I don't think so much of it is on the coach, because, listen, the coach is going to do everything that he needs to do, or he believes he needs to do, him and the coach staff, to get his team ready. Then once you start the game, now it's on your team to be ready. You can't come out flat just because you've been off, for what has it been, a week sort of?
Yeah, it's been a little over a week. They played, what was that, Wednesday night of last week. So that's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That'd be eight. So 9 days, 10 days?
Yeah, 10 days. So it's a long time. But to me, the coaches are going to do what they're they're going to do everything they can to make sure the guys are ready from a schematic standpoint. Mm-hmm. But then after that, it's up to the players to take a hold of it after that, because the coaches can only do so much. Now, they can make adjustments within a game, but it's going to be incumbent on the players to make sure they come out and start off the way they sort of finished the first half of the season, in mm-hmm. a sense. So if this team doesn't come out and play well, depending on how it looks, it could be because not necessarily the coach, but the players. You got to be ready to roll. You've had a nice break. You've taken advantage of it. Got yourself healthy. So when you come off, just like a bye week, when you come off that bye week, you got to be ready because now you're rolling.
You got to hope that energy level's high. Yeah, like, maybe you're not quite as sharp with the precision and the mm-hmm. passing, but – I'm hoping that the energy level, because I do think they were a little bit.
Help that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think too the energy level was a little bit low with all the travel. So I hope that you can make up for any loss of connectivity in the short term with okay, you got fresh legs.
Yeah, you're refreshed. You had a break. And mentally, you don't have any time to waste. Like, no. You don't have a night that you can afford to just get your legs back underneath you, you know, win or
you
loss,
don't have
be
a cushion.
Back and ready on Tuesday. You don't have any cushion. Mm-mm. I do wonder, Willie, you know, last year, heading into the trade deadline, we felt this push from the team of we want to stay together. We want to be together. We want to give ourselves another opportunity to make a run for it, keep this core together. Do you feel that same kind of sentiment with this team? Not that they don't want to be together, not that they don't want to play together, but, I mean, that group that had been together, majority of that core that had been together since the 17 run, that felt a little bit more sentimental. Do you feel that same kind of push of we're going to prove to everyone, we're going to prove to Barry Trotz that we can stay together and make this push?
I think it's a very different feeling this year than last year.
Yeah.
Very different. I think the makeup of the team, as you kind of hinted at, is
different.
Like, and even guys that weren't on the 2017 team, guys like Matt Duchene, right? They were, you know, it was a more of a veteran team for sure, and it was put together to not only make the playoffs, but okay, they're trying to. They had lost in the first round a couple years in a row with a lot of that nucleus, so they were trying to prove that they were better than that they could be back in the playoffs with a chance to win in the playoffs. And it was, you know, it was a tough run, right? It was starts and stops, and then one step forward, a couple steps back, and they finally pulled the plug and said, this group isn't just quite
good enough.
Right? Mikhail Granlund would be another guy in that mix of players that wasn't on the team in 2017, but he was one of the top players, but he wasn't having a great year. And it was like, okay, is it time to shake it up? And David Poile made, I think, a hard decision, especially knowing it was going to be his last year, to, okay, I selfishly would love to, like, load up and see if we can make a go with this because this is my last ride.
Yeah.
But he did the right thing, in my opinion, because I wouldn't have blamed him if he just stood pat and said, okay, let's see if they can do it. I won't mortgage the future, but let's see. But he decided to break it down with the four trades of, you know, some couple guys that were pillars, right? Guys that were a big part of the equation, like Matthias Ekholm, for sure, Granlund, Nino Niederreiter, who was a big free agent pickup, and Tanner Janot, a guy that they, I think, could have kept for the long haul if they wanted to, but they got the assets. And as you heard David Poile say, they're not really getting anything from any of the assets they got in those trades yet. It's mostly futures, and hopefully you're going to see the benefits of that down the road. So this group, I think, has a very different feel to it. I think everybody understands that even a veteran like Ryan O'Reilly or Ryan McDonagh, they came from the outside. They want to be part of a winning group, but I think they know where they are right now. I think the short-term goal is like, let's see if we can get this group into the playoffs. It's there. That would be a great thing if they did. Mm-hmm. And we know that Barry Trotz has to be looking not only at that, but also at the big picture.
All right, coming up next, we got a whole lot of stuff coming out from Radio Row at the Super Bowl. Yet another player who said that, hey, yeah, I want to be in Tennessee. We'll explain coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMace. Ask DeMace in 30 minutes. Get those questions in for DeMace. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan Sunday as Vanderbilt women's basketball takes on Georgia on the road. Pre-game at 10:45 a.m. Tip-off at 11 a.m. with coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.